It's not an option. It's a right. Cocked, locked, and ready to rock the world of the anti-gunners. You are listening to the guy who had to register his mouth as a full auto weapon. Bill Carnes and 2A Radio. The fight for your rights isn't for pansies. So buckle up for the ride and knuckle down with Bill Carnes and 2A Radio.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Bill Carnes. This is the Second Amendment Radio Show. We like to shorten that down to 2A Radio. Of course, you can always go online and check us out. Find all the archives at 2aradio.com. Some people think it's two-way radio. It's not two-way. It's one-way. I talk, you listen. You can't talk back. 2A is in Second Amendment. Two, number two, A, letter A, radio.com. So check that out. We've been on the air for the last couple of years. You can find all of the archives right there at 2aradio.com in their entirety. So catch on up. If you're a new listener, you'll enjoy. Ann Coulter came out, wrote a piece called What Liberals Don't Know About Guns. I found it interesting, so I'm going to read it to you. Fresh off blaming Jared Loughner's killing spree in the Tucson Mall on Sarah Palin, liberals are now blaming it on high-capacity magazines. They might as well imprison everyone named Jared to prevent a crime like this from ever happening again. During the presidential campaign, Obama said, quote, "I don't know of any self-respecting hunter that needs 19 rounds of anything. You don't shoot 19 rounds at a deer. If you do, you shouldn't be hunting." It would have been more accurate for him to end the sentence after the word hunter, simply stating, "I don't know any self-respecting hunter," period. Now, I'm going to insert my own little information here. This is one of the common arguments of the left about hunting and sporting purposes of guns. The Second Amendment has nothing to do with hunting or sporting purposes of guns. That's where the NRA went awry for many, many years. Hunting and sporting purposes. They actually had a mantra, and probably still do. I haven't gone through any new training with the NRA to be a certified instructor since I went through my initial training in about 1996, 1997, whenever it was. And that was, don't say weapon. Say gun or firearm. Don't use the word weapon. When in fact it is. It's a defensive weapon. Continuing on with Ann Coulter's piece. It's so adorable when people who don't know how a high-capacity magazine, don't know a high-capacity magazine from Vanity Fair start telling gun owners what they should want and need. If, in fact, high-capacity magazines put a predator like Loughner at a disadvantage because they are so long, unwielding, and difficult to conceal, this may be why the Tucson shooting appears to be the first spree killing involving a high-capacity magazine. It would have been easier for Loughner to bring two guns. On the other hand, for a homeowner who is a poor marksman, a large capacity clip could be a lifesaver. Tells you that Ann Coulter doesn't know that damned much about guns, calling it a clip. It's not, it's a magazine. Clips exist, magazines exist, they are not interchangeable. Continuing. But after every multiple murder, liberals come up with some crackpot idea to do something that invariably involves infringing on some aspect of our Second Amendment rights. The ACLU won't let us put nuts in mental hospitals, and Pima County Sheriff Clarence Dupnik wouldn't lock up Loughner even after he had broken the law several times. In an open society that includes Sheriff Dupnik and the ACLU, deranged individuals may explode into murder and mayhem now and then. The best we can do is enact policies that will reduce the death toll when these acts are of carnage and occur. There's only one policy of any kind that has ever been shown to deter mass murder, concealed carry laws. In a comprehensive study of all public multiple shooting incidents in America between 1977 and 1999, a period of 22 years, nearly a quarter century, the highly regarded economists John Lott and Bill Landis found that concealed carry laws were the only laws that had any beneficial effect. and the effect was not small. States that allowed citizens to carry concealed handguns reduced multiple shootings attacks by 60% and reduced the death and injury from these attacks by nearly 80%. Where there are no armed citizens to stop mass murders, the killings are able to shoot unabated, even pausing to reload their weapons until they get bored and stop. Some stop only when their trigger finger develops carpal tunnel syndrome. Consider just the school shootings, popular sites for mass murders because so many schools are gun-free zones, or as mass murderers call them, free fire zones. At Columbine High School, two students killed 13 people before ending the carnage themselves by committing suicide. They didn't need high-capacity magazines because they were able to stop and reload. At the Amish school shooting in 2006 in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, the deranged killer murdered five little girls, then committed suicide. In 1998, two students in Craighead County, Arkansas, killed five people, including four little girls, before the killers decided to stop and attempt an escape. And in 2007, a deranged student killed 32 people at Virginia Tech, 30 of them in a very short period of time in one building. He didn't need high-capacity magazines because he had two guns and reloaded. There was no one to stop him. School shootings that have been halted were almost always stopped by the happenstance of an armed citizen on school property. In 2002, an immigrant in Virginia started shooting his classmates at the Appalachian Law School in Grundy. Two of his classmates retrieved guns from their cars, forcing the killer to drop his weapon and allowing a third classmate to tackle him. Three dead. In Santee, California in 2001, when a student began shooting his classmates, the school advocated its safe school plan, and the principal later told CNN by sending a trained campus supervisor to stop the killer. Possibly not realizing that he was in a gun-free zone, the killer responded by shooting the trained campus supervisor three times. Fortunately, an off-duty San Diego policeman happened to be bringing his daughter to school that day. With a gun, he stopped the killer and held him at bay until more police could arrive. Two dead. In 1997, a student in Pearl High School in Pearl, Mississippi, had already shot several people at his high school when he was headed for the junior high when an assistant principal retrieved a .45 from his car and pointed at the gunman's head, ending the slaughter. Two dead. In 1998, another school shooting, at a junior high and a restaurant in Edinburgh, Pennsylvania, he started shooting. Restaurant owner pulled out a shotgun, chased the gunman from the restaurant, captured him for the cops, one dead. See the pattern? In response to Columbine, schools adopted anti-bullying policies. In response to Virginia Tech, eBay ceased selling magazines online. In response to the Tucson shooting, liberals want to ban the particular magazine Loeffner used. And then the next killer will come along with a different arsenal and a different motive, and the only way to stop him will be with an armed citizen with a gun. By Ann Coulter. Can agree with you more, Ann. Besides that, you're pretty hot. Stay tuned. There's more to come after the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, and I'm live right here on 2A Radio.
Tell everyone in the room to pipe down. 2A Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
Welcome back from the break, everyone. How many of you out there, by show of hands, have ever traveled to Mexico? Let me see your show of hands. All right, so a lot of you. A lot of people have traveled to Mexico. I've certainly been to Mexico. I've been to Mexico several times. And the U.S. dollar there is essentially freely used, as it is here in the United States. You can use Mexican pesos or U.S. dollars. Well, with the fiat issues we've got now, and just the creation of trillions upon trillions of dollars just in the past 2 years, the U.S. economy is poised for a massive collapse. Now, the Mexican government has now successfully shed the U.S. dollar from its economy. Keep in mind, the U.S. dollar used to essentially run the Mexican economy. Now it's been shed. Here's the story for you. Mexico has always considered the U.S. dollar almost a second currency to their peso, as the fact that billions of U.S. dollars spent their way through the Mexican economy in 2009 and 2010, which speaks for itself. But sometimes, even the best of friendships come to an end. The Mexican government, in September of last year, enacted a new law which basically restricts the use of U.S. dollars for almost all purchases inside of Mexico. In early 2010, travelers and visitors could shop at many of the large U.S. corporations inside Mexico, such as Walmart, Home Depot, or even one of the hundreds of American food establishments, such as McDonald's or Domino's Pizza, and pay for their meal using U.S. dollars. But under the new law, using U.S. dollars is no longer an option. Just imagine the surprise of many Americans being told by Walmart that U.S. dollars are no longer accepted at their store, especially since Walmart is one of the most iconic American businesses in the world, with such buying power that they set the prices which manufacturers must sell them for their items. Walmart's buying power is so well known, in fact, that most people would normally be able to safely assume with such buying power that Walmart could almost force any country into allowing them to accept U.S. dollars to further their in-store sales. But apparently not even Walmart was that powerful in Mexico. Therefore, it was no surprise that when the story broke in late September 2010 that Mexico was no longer accepting U.S. dollars. The internet was abuzz with conspiracy theories claiming a banking holiday was in short order, or the crash of the U.S. dollar was imminent, and they were raising the BS flag and claiming Mexico would never stop accepting U.S. dollars because those dollars were its economic life support. But as the year closed and those end of the world predictions didn't come to pass, and the fact that Mexico didn't stop accepting the dollar, well, only left many people wondering what really was going on south of the border. The Mexican government had made it clear that they will no longer allow any business to accept U.S. dollars, including American companies, regardless of the operation or who is paying in American dollars. That's right. This means if you're a U.S. citizen and flying to Mexico for vacation or business, your hotel is no longer allowed to exchange cash dollars into pesos at the front desk, which was customary up until this year. Also in Mexico, if you travel to a local bank, regardless of the bank name or national origin, including HSBC from China, which is the fastest growing bank in Mexico, you are no longer able to exchange U.S. dollars for pesos. Only account holders at banks have the options of depositing U.S. dollars into their bank accounts. But this is for deposits only and not exchange. And then you have to have a special type of account setup that is more costly. Of course, even if you don't have a special account that allows you to deposit U.S. dollars in your bank, their bank will charge you a service fee for depositing foreign currency into your account and then probably another service fee for a withdrawal. But of course, that's another issue altogether. So many people are probably asking if the banks no longer exchange money or businesses are no longer allowed to accept U.S. dollars, when what is a person who has a U.S. dollar supposed to do? For those who have traveled to Mexico, there's a good chance you're familiar with the Casa de Cambios, which are small exchange centers for U.S. dollars and often littered on every corner of every large tourist city, or the closer to the border you are. However, the Casa de Cambios themselves have come under strict new regulations as well. They now have been greatly reduced in numbers, and more are closing every day, faster and faster, faster than the one-hour Kodak film processing centers or Blockbuster video locations. Part of the new regulation is that anyone exchanging money for any reason must now present a valid government ID, which is copied and placed on file with a copy of the transaction and amount of money being exchanged. This additional paperwork has hassles, now meaning higher operational costs for these businesses, which in turn means these costs will be passed on to consumers, who are often the one that end up paying for everything anyway. Another drawback is that since there are fewer Casa de Cambios, this means less competition, so the exchange rate doesn't have to be as competitive or even what the bank's posted exchange rate is, After all, you really have no other option in exchanging U.S. dollars. Gone are the days of such advantageous exchange rates that allow anyone exchanging U.S. dollars into pesos additional purchasing power by walking away with more for your money south of the border. The Mexican government wants everybody to believe that these new laws were enacted because the war on drugs and the inability to track all these U.S. dollars floating around their economy, which they claim the drug cartel are using in a black market way, but a closer look indicates something completely different. As the dollar continues to lose purchasing power, so does the ever-enjoyed exchange rate the U.S. dollar held for so long. This is a way to actually help devalue the U.S. dollar while protecting the Mexican economy from going down with the U.S. financial Titanic that has been taking on way too much water in the form of overspending and red ink. With the value of the dollar sliding lower each day, there are some experts who are predicting the U.S. dollar to reach a point that it will either collapse or need to be reevaluated by either way. But either way, the peso is expected to be worth more than the U.S. dollar, and this looks like it will happen sometime very soon at the rate of how things are exchanging for the dollar around the world. This is why it looks as if the Mexican government is doing everything it can to remove as many U.S. dollars from their economy so there are fewer U.S. dollars in circulation inside of Mexico, so that when the U.S. dollar does finally go by the wayside, there will be less of a direct effect on the Mexican economy as a whole. So, you know, my thinking on this is, we send billions, with a B, billions of dollars every year to Mexico in aid. Billions. And if our dollar is no longer accepted, then why should we bother sending them a dime? Really, why should we bother? Here's my thinking. Don't send Mexico 10 cents, or in this case, 50 pesos, whatever 10 cents works out to be. We will lock down the border. If the U.S. government truly wanted to lock down the border, it would take about 72 hours. Put all the border agents out there. Get the National Guard activated to have them out there. And you could literally have one man for every about 100 to 150 yards. That means that there would be only 50 yards in either direction that they would need to cover. 100 yards altogether. Maybe 75. You can do that. If you have that many men on the border with guns, you're not going to have traffickers coming through. Seal it off. Then you allow the ports of entry to work as normal. Of course, we could certainly check vehicles leaving the U.S. as we check them coming in, but that's for Mexico to deal with if they really want to check them coming in. Seal off the border, only allow ports of entry, have armed men with guns on the border to prevent incursions, and stop sending money to Mexico. What's wrong with that? Is there anything wrong with that? Stay tuned, guys. More to come after the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio.
Attention all long-range precision riflemen and long-distance shooting hunters. Come and join other like-minded long-range riflemen this April for the Bill Carnes 2A Radio Precision Rifle Course being held just outside Las Vegas, Nevada. This is your chance to put your gear to the test and perfect your long-range rifle shooting skills. Think of it as Sniper 101. We'll be collecting repeatable data from 100 yards out to 1,000 yards and beyond. Imagine having confirmed repeatable data for your rifle and the round you choose in 50-yard increments out to the furthest limit of your trajectories. You'll learn the secrets of the proper way to clean and maintain your precision rifle for extended life and accuracy well beyond your expectations. You'll also have the opportunity to shoot a 50-caliber sniper rifle and hit a target at 1 mile. To find out more, go to victoryshoot.org. Don't miss out on this opportunity. Visit victoryshoot.org today. That's victoryshoot.org.
You're listening to a guy who packs a gun to shoot the bad guys and packs a mic to shoot his mouth off. Bill Carnes and 2A Radio are back.
Hi, guys. Welcome back. Why are we talking about the dollar? Well, because if the dollar does crash, if the Federal Reserve System's currency does crash, that means all sorts of mayhem in the United States. That means a lot of people fending for themselves, or small groups, neighborhoods, families fending for themselves. So it does really relate to Second Amendment freedoms and what we're going to have to face if this does go down. The writing's on the wall. Now, how about this? When the state of Virginia eyes switching off the dollar, citing inevitable destruction of the Federal Reserve System's currency, there's an issue. The Virginia State Delegate Robert G. Marshall, he's introduced legislation to study whether the Commonwealth should make the preparations now to switch suddenly to an alternative currency in the event of an implosion of the Federal Reserve System and the destruction of the dollar. Virginia's House Joint Resolution 557 is another piece of a growing movement among state legislators who are concerned about the dollar's demise. 10 states have considered similar bills, recommending a return to some form of commodity-based currency, either silver or gold. Marshall's Resolution 557 offers a list of worst-case scenarios to support the need for such a study, including many widely recognized experts predict the inevitable destruction of the Federal Reserve System's currency through hyperinflation in the foreseeable future. In the event of hyperinflation, depression, or other economic calamity related to the breakdown of the Federal Reserve System for which the Commonwealth is not prepared, the Commonwealth's governmental finances and Virginia's private economy would be thrown into chaos. To avoid economic, social, and political shock, Virginia can adopt an alternative sound currency that the Commonwealth's government and citizens may employ without delay in the event of the destruction of the Federal Reserve System's currency. Inevitable destruction, economic calamity, and chaos are not words used lightly when considering the fate of the nation's currency. Marshall chose them for good reason, and he told WorldNet Daily the following, quote, "I have read the financial pages, and I see the cover-up that the Obama administration is engaged in, eliminating the cost of food and energy from CPI to fool the public about the rate of inflation, and the fact that China is seeking to become an international currency, and Russia, Japan, Saudi Arabia, and China have all met to discuss this possibility. The Virginia legislator also is aware that the recent reports from the International Monetary Fund politely warning of the U.S. to bring its public debts under control, and also Moody's Investor Service, which recently hinted that the U.S. with its $1.5 trillion deficit and debt approaching, well, it's over $14 trillion now, not including the $70 trillion off-balance sheet commitments to Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, should be next to lose its AAA credit rating, ultimately making it much more difficult for the U.S. to borrow money needed to pay its debt." Well, here's a quote. "The fact that the Federal Reserve has resorted to the printing press, well, these are the ingredients, the precursors to hyperinflation. We can't predict when it will happen, but we should be prepared for it, even if we're serious about being in public office," Marshall said. The kind of study Marshall is proposing never has been popular among politicians who get elected and stay elected by making promises to the voters, usually with lofty price tags. On the other hand, a commodity-backed currency, a gold standard, if you will, forces governments to spend only as much money as its country has in gold and provides a self-regulating and stabilizing effect on the economy. So what are the chances of moving the bill through the Virginia legislature? It's puzzling, says Marshall. I presented it to the subcommittee, and they just sat there smiling like Cheshire cats. They didn't move to kill it, and they didn't move to report it to the committee. So I'm going to try and move it along and get the attention of someone on the full committee to report it. This proposal, says Marshall, is about being prepared. If you're crossing the Atlantic on the Titanic, somebody should think about a life preserver. This is about asking the simple question, does Virginia need some lifeboats? Can we build them, and how long will it take? Hear ye, to the state representative Marshall. I gotta tell you, We got really hosed with the entire Federal Reserve System back in the 1913, I think, is when it was originally passed. Over 100 pieces of legislation later, the Federal Reserve System is even more autonomous, and they're essentially entirely autonomous. They are not a federal organization. They don't belong to the federal government. The federal government doesn't have any oversight. We borrow money from them. The government of the United States owns no currency, has no currency, provides for no currency. It is all through the private Federal Reserve banking system. Who are the shareholders of this private corporation? Well, that's all private and secret. However, enough investigation over the years, if you research it, you'll find European bankers, European families, the Rothschilds, and of the like. They own American currency. They own America. The currency belongs to them. They create it, and we use it as some sort of monetary value. It used to say on the bottom of the Federal Reserve notes that you could actually take the note to any Federal Reserve bank in exchange for real money. Well, that ended in the 1960s. And soon after, 1971, then-President Richard M. Nixon officially removed the United States off of the gold standard. Essentially, there are no economies left on any gold standard. The nation of Germany, Deutschland, what have they done to honor their currency debt? The debt of the currency that they have, the money they've had to borrow? Land. They're using their own land, their own physical country, their land. That's what they're using as collateral. If they had a gold standard, they wouldn't need to put up their land as collateral because the gold would be the collateral. Same thing in this country. You've got all sorts of promises that the U.S. State Department, through Hillary Clinton, has made to China, the country who's been bailing us out financially, about our land, and more so the mineral rights to the land. Mineral rights. Let me give you an example of mineral rights. If you go online and you look at the American Institute of Energy, American Energy Institute, AEI, and you look up the state of Colorado, the state of Colorado has an estimated 1 trillion barrels of oil under the Rocky Mountains in shale oil. Difficult to extract. There is technology coming now to actually be able to extract that. 1 trillion gallons. Let me give you an idea of that. That is equal to all of the other oil reserves known on planet Earth. Everything in Saudi Arabia, Canada, Alaska, throughout the entire Middle East, Yemen, Iraq, Kuwait, add all of those oil reserves up, the rest of the United States, China, all of those oil reserves, you end up with somewhere around 1 trillion barrels. Just in shale oil in Colorado alone is 1 trillion barrels. We need to prepare, guys. Stay tuned. More to come right after these words.
If you live in a state which allows Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories, and you either have an interest in or already own Class 3 NFA items, the process for an individual to own these items includes photographs, fingerprints, obtaining a letter of permission from your police chief or sheriff, and a full personal background check which is spread across the whole federal system. Until now, Forming an NFA trust eliminates the requirements of letters of permission and all personal data and background checks in purchasing and possessing NFA firearms and accessories. NFA trusts offer a level of anonymity as well as flexibility in the purchasing, possessing, and storage of your Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories. To learn more about forming a secure and flexible NFA trust at a fraction of the cost from attorneys, visit www.billcarnes.com and click on the NFA tab. That's BILLCARNS.com and click on the NFA tab.
As long as politicians attack our rights, Bill will be fighting for them. Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
Back off, I'll take you on. Headstrong to take on anyone. I know that you are wrong, and this is not where you belong.
Welcome back from the break, everyone. You know, in a lot of states, you have to pay for things like gun registration, or pay to have a concealed carry permit. In some states, you got to pay to be able to carry exposed. Keep in mind, here's an interesting little tidbit. In the state of California, it's up to each and every county sheriff whether they want to decide if they're going to grant your request for concealed weapons permit. If you want to carry exposed, you have to do it unloaded. If you want to carry exposed, what the gun has to be loaded, you want the gun loaded, you have to go through the same mother may I permission that you do for a concealed weapons permit. So to carry exposed and loaded in California, you got to go through the exact same rigmarole as carrying concealed. And they're charging all of these fees. Well, why pay for gun registration? There's a better way to make money for any state. In Vermont, State Representative Frank Maslick has read the Second Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, as well as the Vermont Constitution. He's read them very carefully. And his strict interpretation of these documents is popping some eyeballs in New England and elsewhere. Maslick recently proposed a bill to register non-gun owners and require them to pay a $500 fee to the state. Thus, Vermont would become the first state to require a permit for the luxury of going about unarmed and assess a fee of $500 for the privilege of not owning a gun. Interesting. Maslick read the militia phrase of the Second Amendment as not only the right of the individual citizen to bear arms, but as a clear mandate to do so. He believes that universal gun ownership was advocated by the framers of the Constitution as antidote to a monopoly of force by the government as well as criminals. Now, Vermont's constitution states explicitly that, quote, the people have a right to bear arms for the defense of themselves and the state, and those persons who are conscientiously scrupulous of bearing arms shall be required to pay such equivalent. Meaning, it says right there in their constitution, they can be charged for not exercising their right to bear arms, which also means they're not able or willing to defend the state as a whole. Clearly, says Maslick, Vermonters have a constitutional obligation to arm themselves so that they are capable of responding to, quote, any situation that may arise. Under the bill, adults who choose not to own a firearm would be required to register their name, address, social security number, and driver's license number with the state. This is a legitimate government interest in knowing who is not prepared to defend the state should they be asked to do so, Maslick said. Here's what I disagree with. Social security number? There's nothing anywhere that says that Americans have to have a social security number unless they happen to work for the federal government or the state government. And in some states, you don't have to be a state government employee. On top of that, what if you don't drive? How are you supposed to give a driver's license number? You know, that actually always ticks me off. Whenever I go into some sort of a store or a business, something like that, and they ask me for a driver's license or a driver's license number, I look at them and I say, What if I don't drive? What happens if I don't drive and I don't have a driver's license? Oh, some other state-issued ID. You know, what if the state itself doesn't issue me ID? Then what? I have a real issue with that. We have to go to the state and register with the state that I'm here, and then they issue us some form of governmental ID, which then gives them some sort of authority to make that ID expire as if we're expiring, or jump through some sort of hoops and pay a fee to identify ourselves. I have a real problem with that. Anyhow, let's see. Vermont already boasts a high rate of gun ownership, along with the least restrictive laws of any state. It's currently the only state that allows a citizen to carry a concealed firearm without... That is absolutely not true, whoever wrote this article. There are three states which you can carry without a permit. Vermont, Alaska, Arizona. Carry concealed without a permit. Let's see, this combination of plenty of guns and few laws regulating them has resulted in a crime rate that is the third lowest in the nation. Now, keep in mind also in Vermont, there really isn't anything in the way of gun laws on the state books. There are, however, and this is a little misleading to a lot of people, in Vermont there are different municipal and county regulations, I guess I should say, codes, that otherwise regulate firearms in certain areas. So Vermont is not quite as free, open, and friendly as you might think. On the state level, yes. On the local and county level, not exactly. Here's a quote. America is at that awkward stage. It's too late to work within the system, but too early to shoot the bastards. Well, that makes sense. There's no reason why gun owners should have to pay taxes to support police protection for people not wanting to own guns. Let them contribute their fair share and pay their own way. Sounds reasonable to me. Of course, non-gun owners require more police to protect them, and this fee should go into paying for their defense. I agree. I don't call the cops very often. There's not much need in my life for cops. The only reason I would ever have the cops come around is to take some sort of a report if I wasn't able to handle something, or more so, take a report after I handled something. That's the only time I ever really need to have a cop. Now, if somebody calls the cops on a regular basis because they're too frail, too meek to be able to own a gun and handle things themselves, well then, them to pay basically an extra fee or a tax to help support having the luxury of having cops and not actually following along and having, and I guess, protecting themselves in the state by owning a gun, exercising their Second Amendment rights, and in a lot of cases it's in the state constitution as well, that's a recognized right. People who don't do that probably should be paying a higher fee. I'm all for it. I'm all for it. All of us know somebody that calls the cops at every little instance. You might know somebody who's, say, a police dispatcher that gets calls from somebody on a regular basis. Oh, I'm going to call the cops. I'm going to call the cops. I'm going to call the cops. Really? Are you so pathetic and meek that you feel the need to call the police at every single opportunity? You know, the cops have a lot of things to do. They got tickets to write. They got jaywalkers to hassle. They got people standing on the street doing nothing that they need to go investigate and interview. They have people who get prescriptions for marijuana and own a gun that they have to bust in their doors and arrest them for having a gun while having a marijuana prescription. They got important stuff like that to do, guys. They haven't got time to listen to people who just want to call the cops all the time. There should almost be a fee for calling the cops. How about that? How about every time you call the cops on something, you pay a fee? Maybe it's $20. Hey, I'm calling the police. I need your assistance for something other than, say, a felony in progress. Felony in progress? Okay. That'll be handled by the people who have to pay $500 because they're not owning and carrying and using a gun. Okay. Other than that, if you call the cops, my neighbor's, their stereo's too loud. Okay. We'll go take care of it, and we'll come over there and collect the $20 when we're done. Of course, you want to make sure you get your $20 worth. You want that Sarah to stay down. Any recalls on the same call, that goes towards the original $20. You don't have to keep paying it. Not a money-making scheme. Right? How about that? That way, the losers who call the cops for every tiny little thing would either go broke and stop, or stop in lieu of going broke. I like the idea. Folks, you have to be able to take care of yourself and your family, and in some cases, your neighborhood and community, and in even more cases, your state. You need to be able to take care of yourself first. If you don't own a gun, you cannot handle a gun, you own a gun and have no idea how to use it, you're part of the problem, not part of the solution. You have to own guns, own the guns at work, own ammunition that will feed reliably through them, know how to deploy them effectively and efficiently, then you're part of the solution.
I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you in Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule.
Thanks for tuning in. Bill will be back tomorrow. Now go side in and shoot straight. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes. Learn more about Bill at BillCarnes.com. Send your comments to Bill at 2aradio.com.